E ia ka aha ho o kolo kolo kie kie hano hano ua a ko ko ho maila. This Honorable Supreme Court is reconvened. E noho ilalo, please be seated.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 1755, State of Hawaii v. Stephen Young. Arguing for petitioner, Sean Louise. Arguing for the respondent, Paul Mao. Argument on the merits.
All right, good morning, Mr. Louise and Mr. Mao. Are you both ready to proceed today? Okay, very well. Mr. Louise, you reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. We'll give you a warning with 10 minutes to go, and we'll give you a warning as well with 10 minutes, Mr. Mao. So please proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and aloha.
Could move the mic up just a little bit more so we can hear you. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and aloha and Happy New Year, as I haven't been here yet this year. And the reason I filed this petition for writ of certiorari is because I was deeply concerned that the rights of my client, Stephen E. Young, were deeply affected when the circuit court in this matter decided to impose a sex offender treatment requirement, even though my client at the time of his sentence was not sentenced in accordance with a new sex crime.
I have a follow-up question along those lines. And at the time of sentencing, your client actually stated that he had actually completed the sex offender treatment program during his prior sentence. And he also said that several times in the PSI. And the PO said that, however, his report of having completed sex offender treatment was not verified as Hawaii Paroling Authority records were unavailable for review. Is there anything in the record that indicates whether or not he had actually completed it previously?
No, because the court didn't. I mean, at that point, the court should have had a continuance and allowed that information to be presented to the court to take into effect all the factors under the sentencing statute, instead of going forward not knowing whether or not that information was verified.
Well, was there an objection from the defense on that ground, or a request for a continuance?
I believe my client's statement during the sentencing that he was completed the sex offender treatment was, for all intents and purposes, his objection, because he was protesting as he had already completed, according to him, the sex offender treatment. And it wouldn't have taken too much trouble for the court to just sua sponte call a continuance and then allow that information from the parole authority and even prior records, because this is a very old case.
But Mr. Lewis, you didn't point that out as a point of error on appeal. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. I didn't point that out.
And also, regarding the making the attendance for sex or participation in sex offender treatment as part, that was a point of error in August 7, 2017 on the same sentencing, right? You said that the court erred in ordering appellant to sex offender treatment. On the companion case that was with the prosecutors, and it was the same sentencing procedure.
Yes.
With the same judge proceeding.
It was consolidated for Judge Kawamura.
So you have already claimed that Judge Kawamura, and that one was on the drug violation, right?
However,
and that one, that was already appealed and cert was denied, and on this one it's actually on the failure to report on the sex offender treatment.
Well, right? that's because the other case involved a crystal.
It had other search and seizure considerations.
Yes.
But you've already litigated before us whether the court was appropriate, the court was correct on whether it was appropriate to sentence him to sex offender treatment.
I didn't challenge it on these grounds, and that was a different charge for his crystal meth amphetamine, and that really didn't have anything to do with his sentencing for the crystal meth amphetamine, because he was charged with a new sex crime violation of failure to register.
In this one?
Yes.
So you so even this actually is concerned with sex offender registration. The other one was concerned with the drug offense, right?
Yes, and that's why I raised it in this one. And as far as for it, it wasn't consolidated for appeal purposes. It was consolidated by the trial court, sua sponte,
right.
And it chose to go forward with both matters at the trial court level on December 1st, 2016.
Maybe I could follow up on Justice Nakayama's question to be clear about your position, Mr. Luis, with respect to how the sentencing court should have viewed the prior conviction for sexual assault. I think your argument is that, if I'm correct, that shouldn't have been considered in the sentencing for the failure to report or the failure to comply with probation, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But
my client's being punished twice.
But doesn't HRS Section 706-606 require that the characteristics, the history and characteristics of the defendant be considered? And as Justice Nakayama is suggesting, wouldn't that mean that the judge could consider the fact that there had been a prior conviction for sexual assault and there had been a failure to comply with the sentence that was meant to provide rehabilitation and therefore it would be a basis to determine that there should be a registration as a result of this new offense, which is failure to report?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because it's very similar to the State v. Nunes case where someone was sentenced more harshly for a gang affiliation at the time of sentencing that was not verified. And that's very similar to the facts of this case. There was a factual dispute whether or not my client had completed his sex offender treatment by
and, in fact, the point of error specifically and the reason why the writ should be granted says sex offender treatment was unnecessary. And then it goes on to say because he was not convicted of a new crime. In other words, it might have been necessary even if he had completed treatment if there had been a new sex crime. But I think the position is that it was unnecessary. And it is unnecessary is actually a requirement under 706-602. You don't order the requirement, both under, this was imposed as a condition of probation. Conditions of probation require that conditions be reasonably related to the factors set forth in 706-606. And when you look at 706-606, one of the primary ones is the need for the sentence imposed. If your client already had sex offender treatment, then how can a court reorder it under the circumstances of this case?
Yes, Your Honor, and I also believe the ICA mischaracterized his appeal because they said it's not plain error and that he waived it because it wasn't raised at the trial level, the constitutional. However, this was actually a sentencing matter of the procedural posture. So he is appealing the sentencing and not just the statute itself. It's as it relates to him that it's unconstitutional. And I think also if we look at the case that I cited in my petition, the State v. Guidry, the 105 Hawaii 222, excuse me, at page 224, the 2004 case, it actually talks about the statute involved here, that it implicates a protected liberty interest under the Hawaii Constitution, Article 1, Section 5. And it even discusses the appropriate procedure if there's a question in called into question with that. And if you look, it states right in the opinion that I quoted in the brief, such a proceeding may be instituted by a sex offender in a special proceeding. So,
right. So the question was going to be, did you do that?
I believe my client has to exhaust his direct appeal rights before doing that. However, I think that because it is being considered on direct appeal and he had his chance to have counsel that brought it in a direct appeal, it should be considered in this proceeding as part of the appeal.
And it's my understanding that his sex assault conviction is one of those that would be one of the lifetime ones. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing, too, is basically, and what I look at is even the failure to comply, he's already served. He served his 10-year sentence. He was sentenced to Class B in Class C felonies, although he was originally charged with a Class A. And when you look at the statute, it really calls into question the state's authority to be able to impose this condition on someone who's already completed their sentence, and now you charge him with a new Class C felony up to 5 years in prison just for the failure to register.
Are you saying that as a matter of law, the court couldn't sentence someone who's not convicted of a sex offense as to this condition, or just on the facts of this case?
On the facts of this case, because there was a dispute, and there's nothing in the record that supports that he needed, because he hadn't committed a sex crime other than what he was originally convicted of.
So you would concede that if he had not completed, if it was clear he hadn't completed the sex offender treatment, that reordering it would have been, in this case, a condition that was reasonably related. Under 706, 6062, there would have been a need for it. Is that right?
I believe it could be, because then he wouldn't be, and we wouldn't be at that point challenging the lifetime condition. We'd be challenging whether or not he had actually complied with the term. But then again, if he had not complied with the term, it was up to the state to bring that forward in a motion to revoke probation at the time before he completed his sentence, and he was.
But I thought he was originally on probation, and then he was taken in on a probation violation, and he actually served his time.
He did. So that's why I think it was.
And he apparently completed the program within the in prison?
Yes, in prison with the state doctor who handles that. So I think that would still be.
If you're so certain of that, why wasn't there any evidence presented of that?
Well, the records.
And why didn't you bring it up? As a point of error on appeal and on cert?
Well, I brought up.
I mean, just your client said that, but
yes.
At the PSI.
Yes, and it's supported by the record, but I brought up that because he wasn't convicted of.
No, I mean, you just said that he completed his sex offender treatment program.
Yes, and plus
but
he wasn't.
What is there evidence of? Is there evidence of it?
Yes, his statement in the court is the evidence of that.
Okay. There was no objection. I mean, you said that's like a de facto objection, but he has a lawyer. Should not the lawyer have said, Your Honor, there's clearly a dispute here. We'd ask for a continuance. And, you know, in fact, at the beginning of the proceeding, the question was any additions, corrections to the pre-sentence investigation report, and the answer was no corrections or additions from his counsel. And then later on, this matter came up where he said he had completed, but there was no request for continuance, no suggestion to the court that it couldn't go forward.
I think because it involves a plain error here, and that it implicates an important liberty interest, that it substantially affects his right to his detriment, and that it should still be considered by this court as a plain error.
Can I? Oh, I'm sorry. Please.
He got sentenced in 2017, right?
I'm sorry?
He got sentenced in 2017. Has he completed it already?
He was sentenced. Yeah, he did his 1 year. He was sentenced to 1 year in 2016, December 1st. And then.
So with credit, with like 222 days of credit.
Yes. And he completed his program because right now he's in HOPE probation. And one time he had one little. Hiccup. He took some supplements that they said could have tested.
That's all right. Yeah. That's right. It's not relevant.
Yes. Okay. So he's been out for at least.
So has he completed
a year.
Sex offender treatment the second time? I mean, assuming if he did complete it the first time, as a condition of his HOPE probation, did he complete it already?
I'm sorry, I don't have the answer to that question.
Would it be a legitimate factor for the court to consider in imposing this condition the fact that he had failed to report for registration? In other words, the particular offense here was a failure to report for a sex offense. Is that a factor that the court could take into account in deciding whether perhaps there's a lack of understanding or a lack of acceptance on his part of the concerns that one might have about him reoffending, and that itself could be a reason for imposing the treatment program as a condition of probation?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because it's not like he was missing in action. He was actually in custody of the state, and they have requirements that in order for parole that they have to look at the individual and his records and kind of frame a parole plan.
Wait a minute. Are you saying the reason he did not report and did not for sex offender, registration, is because he was in custody at the time?
No. He was in custody, completed his sentence, and the state didn't ensure that those records were properly maintained about whether or not he had completed his sex offender treatment or not.
Right. My question is, he's been adjudicated as a sex offender. He has failed to report. Could the fact that he is an adjudicated sex offender who has failed to report raise a legitimate concern on the part of the trial court that this might be a reasonable condition to impose on him?
Well,
I'm just asking your response, didn't you?
Yes, that's why we raised a plain error that this affects and implicates an important liberty interest applied to him.
Well, I guess my question is, wholly apart from whether he completed it or not before, is the fact that he failed to report, could that give, legitimately standing alone, give rise to a sufficient concern to impose this condition?
I believe no, because he wasn't convicted of a new crime.
So why did they make it a crime not to not report?
That's why we raise the equal protection. Why is it that he doesn't report and he's charged with a Class C felony, but someone commits manslaughter, second-degree murder, robbery, and violent offenses?
So are you saying that sex offender treatment is not a viable treatment to assist offenders in conforming to the norms of society?
It is, but not in his case, because he was in custody. The state has the obligation to make sure he's rehabilitated and does whatever programs he's supposed to do.
With sex offender?
Yes.
Treatment.
But it implicates a fundamental right to be put in jeopardy twice. Basically, he is being punished again just for his status and being charged with a new crime, a Class C felony. And
well, not his status. My question to you is, there's conduct, which is, or a lack of conduct, which is a failure to report. Given his history, is that not something that the court could legitimately draw an inference that there may be an issue here? He may not fully be rehabilitated. He may not fully appreciate the seriousness of the issue, that he underlying issue. Therefore, I am going to impose the sex offender treatment program again based on his failure to report.
I say no, Your Honor, because he wasn't picked up for a new sex crime. He was picked up for crystal methamphetamine and
broken taillight.
Broken taillight, thank you, Your Honor. So that's why I would say it doesn't even under the sentencing factors that Justice Pollack pointed out, that it wasn't rationally related to whatever the goals and objectives are for the
But, you know, Guidry, this court has already specifically rejected your under-inclusive constitutional argument. Your constitutional argument, it's not based on, you know, because he's homeless, he has to report four times a year instead of just, because there was a separate count for that, right? Because he's homeless, he has to show up four times a year?
Yes, Your Honor.
In addition to the annual check-in that he missed in 2015 and 16.
Yes.
Well, are you suggesting that this court should overrule Guidry? We've already ruled on the issue you raised.
Yes, because it is an old case. It's 2004. And I think that the court should overrule it just by looking at the way it's being applied in practice. In the lower courts, that it should be overruled to protect the liberty interest of indigent defendants.
I'm still reaching for the reason, Mr. Luiz, in response to the CJ's question, for your position that where a judge who's making a sentencing decision as to failure to report with respect to the requirements of a sex offender, sees in the record that the sex offender treatment for a previous offense, you know, previous sex assault offense, has been completed, but the defendant didn't seem to necessarily learn from it, right? Let's assume that it was completed. Why wouldn't that be a characteristic that could be considered? Because it's a new development. It's a new development in the sense that if he failed to report as perhaps required by his sex offender treatment program, it's likely that was part of his sex offender treatment program, you know, comply with the conditions of court. Why? I don't know. I'm interested in why that doesn't qualify under 706-606 as history and characteristic of the defendant.
The solution, Your Honor, is to order him to report, not to order him to a new sex offender treatment program that he already completed.
What if there was testimony at the sentencing then that he had completed it, but as a result of his failure to report, it appears as though he needs additional treatment because he didn't learn?
Well, he is being punished for not reporting in accordance with the statute, so his punishment should be related to not reporting and what the state needs to do to compel him to report.
You just said that it's the duty of the government to treat defendants and try and rehabilitate him. And if he has gone through a treatment program and has not been rehabilitated, why wouldn't it still be incumbent upon the government to try to continue to try to rehabilitate him? Why do you want him to just throw him out and say, no, we're not going to do anything anymore? You yourself said it's a duty. So why wouldn't another treatment program be warranted?
Because he's rehabilitated as far as sex offenses, because he hasn't committed a new sex offense. And what he's in trouble for is not reporting just for his status. So the solution
is... But as a matter of law, then, the only way in which his failure to rehabilitate could be shown is if he committed another sex offense?
That's what I believe. That's
Or could there be something in the record indicating that it doesn't have to necessarily be another offense, that, in fact, that he's engaged in behavior that might warrant it? I mean, but the thing is, was there anything in the record to support the fact that a reinstitution, I mean, they've already ordered sex offender treatment, and this offense was, what, 20 years earlier, or how much earlier?
1999.
It's from 1999, and then he was sentenced.
Nearly 20 years later, they're reimposing it? And there's nothing in the record to support, not only is it the record at minimally ambiguous about whether he's completed, but there's nothing indicating that new sex offender treatment is warranted.
Yes, Your Honor, that's why we're objecting. And he needed drug treatment, not sex offender treatment, because he was caught with crystal methamphetamine in his moped. And that's what was rationally related that the judge should have imposed, is make sure he's not going to be smoking crystal methamphetamine, which is a very dangerous drug. We just look around downtown, the effects on individuals who walk around with crystal methamphetamine effects. And the psychological reports that come from the brain damage that psychologists...
Is that not record? Mm-hmm. It is?
Oh, no. I'm saying, just as an argument, just the common sense thing here, that's a very dangerous drug that even psychologists say revert people to a grade school mentality if they use enough of it.
Weren't the state and the AG asking for a 5-year open term in this matter? So the judge is looking at, you know, here, facing a pitch that he's a danger to the community, hasn't taken responsibility, isn't deserving of probation, and the judge tries to craft a sentence that she thinks reasonably is going to protect the community. And based on his failure to report and his history, imposed this program. And that's an abuse of discretion in those circumstances where she's trying to give him the opportunity to remain in the community except for the 1 year of incarceration?
Yes, Your Honor, because he was convicted of a drug offense, and he was being punished for a drug offense, not for a sex crime.
Well, no, failure to register and the drug offense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even though he was granted probation, if by chance he says, look, you know, I completed sex offender treatment, I don't have a problem, this is 20 years ago, if he doesn't go to sex offender treatment, he can get his probation revoked and get a five-year prison term.
And the judge never gave him a chance to do that. She just gave him 1 year right off the bat without even allowing
him. No, I'm saying that if he doesn't follow through, that's why this condition, although the court granted probation, it is a conditional probation in the sense that he could end up getting the full five-year term.
Yes, Your Honor.
Anything further at this point, Mr. Luis, or hold, do you want to reserve your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to just reserve some time.
Very well. Mr. Ma, thank you.
May it please the court. Deputy Attorney General Paul Mao, representing the respondent, the State of Hawaii. The petitioner has challenged in his appeal the sentencing decision by the Honorable Judge Shirley Comer by objecting to the 1 year of jail as a condition of probation and ordering the petitioner to participate in the Hawaii State Sex Offender Treatment Program. He's also, as we've seen, claimed that there was plain error by the trial court to find the petitioner guilty despite his change of plea.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last thing you said.
Because he's claiming equal protection is what I meant, right? Is one of his arguments. The respondent's position is that none of these violations have occurred, and we're asking for the ICA's decision to be affirmed. We know that the petitioner's plea was knowing and voluntary because there was no motion to withdraw his plea at any time.
Do you think that the ICA correctly ruled that the constitutionality of a statute cannot be challenged on appeal?
Constitutionality of a statute cannot be challenged on appeal. I think that's kind of a broad statement. I think it depends on the particulars of it and, you know, the specific issues.
Okay, the specific challenges that he raised here, that he was prohibited from raising these challenges. Putting aside the merits, mm-hmm, of the claims that he was prohibited from raising these challenges, do you think that that ruling was correct?
That ruling was correct.
The ICA's ruling that he couldn't challenge it.
That he couldn't challenge the constitutionality? I think the grounds that he has stated, I don't think provide a proper basis for
that. Well, that's going to the merits. I think Justice McKenna is asking you about the jurisdictional, essentially, argument that by virtue of his no contest here plea, he had waived the ability to challenge the statute on constitutional grounds.
On constitutional grounds.
He waived that by pleading no contest. That's, specific question,
right,
that
not specifically.
We're asking.
I think what he waived was on procedural grounds. Procedurally, he did it in the act of changing his plea and not challenging it in any kind of way, you know, through a motion to withdraw his plea.
You argued that he couldn't argue this on appeal. The state argued that he didn't have a right to argue this on appeal, correct?
Yeah, that's our belief, that he waived it, you know, but I believe that it's a procedural waiver is the reason why that he did it. It's through the form of when he did his plea and he went forward with it. And I don't think there's a question of whether it was his wish to plead, you know, in the case. That's not the area that I think is the focus, as far as my understanding is.
If he pled no contest to something that turns out to not even be a crime under Hawaii law, is it the position of the state of Hawaii that he could not at any time challenge the fact that he has pled to something that was not even a crime?
Well, if there was something that was not a crime?
Yes.
That's, I think, a little bit different than here.
Well, that's a jurisdictional issue, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and why is the constitutionality or the validity of the statute not also a jurisdictional issue within the meaning of those cases?
I don't have a good answer for that, Your Honor, but the, you know, my position or the state's position on this is that he did waive on these grounds. That's
all right. So assuming we disagree with that position, when the state does go to sentencing on these sex offender types of claims, mm-hmm. And request sex offender treatment, and the defendant in the PSI is saying, I did it already, does the state not check?
Does the state not check? At the time of sentencing, we're relying primarily on the information that we have in the pre-sentence investigation, certainly.
Right, and the pre-sentence investigation, he says, I completed it.
Yeah.
And then the probation officer says, he says he's completed it, but I can't check because I don't have access to the Hawaii Paroling Authority records.
Yeah.
Doesn't the Attorney General's office have access to those?
I cannot say that we necessarily do. We could certainly make inquiries, but there could be a number of reasons why the records are not available. You know, I don't have a good answer for that as to why the records might not be available.
Mr. Mao, you didn't request sex offender treatment, right? You wanted an open term.
Yes. Okay. The state's position at the time was for open term. That was the state's position from the Attorney General's office. That was the state's position from the Department of the Prosecuting Attorney.
And is it your position then that in any, as a matter of law, any violation of the requirement for reporting for sex offender constitutes a basis to order sex offender treatment?
Could you say that again, Justice Sotomayor?
I'm really wondering whether you think this is a factual analysis as to whether or not sex offender treatment can be ordered as a result of a violation of the requirements for, you know, reporting as a sex offender. And
okay.
As a matter of law, is it just enough that there's a violation of the requirement of reporting? Or, in your view, do there have to be some facts that indicate a behavior on the part of the defendant that would suggest that they need additional sex offender treatment?
Well, yes, I understand what you're saying. I think under HRS 706-606, the court is having to consider sentencing factors. I believe under sub 1, we look at factors such as the character and the history of this defendant. And when we look at those types of things, what we learn is that this is the petitioner has a long criminal history, dating back to 1979. Certainly that's a consideration by the judge, that the petitioner, based on his record, he's a person that's committed multiple felony offenses. That's certainly part of the reason why the state has asked for the open term. These are robbery in the second degree.
What year was that, the rob? 1980s?
I believe it was in 1980s.
Right.
I have the date.
And he was released in 2013. And he was very dangerous because he was picked up 3 years later on a broken taillight, right, on the moped. And this is why the state is arguing he is so dangerous that you need an open term. Because of the crystal meth, too.
He is dangerous also because he violated the registration laws for sex offender. Those are felony offenses. It's more than just, you know, a moped offense or, you know, other related things that he was picked up on. It's more than just the renewed drug offenses. It's more than the fact that, you know, he's undergone drug treatment in the past and now has reoffended.
I know when he was released, he was told that he had to register, like, within 30 days or 60 days after his birthday every year. Was he also told that if he became homeless, he'd have to report 4 times a year?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
I believe the officer told him that.
All right.
At the time. They're notified of their requirements under registration. And, you know, registration... Go ahead, Justice.
Well, so, Mr. Mao, it seems what you're saying, it doesn't matter under the way you just answered the question. It really doesn't matter if the defendant has completed sex offender treatment.
You know, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. I think it depends on the particular facts and circumstances here. I think what was before the court is there's no confirmation that he completed a program. There may be some evidence that he did.
Well, do you think it's relevant?
It could be relevant, but it's also possible that even if he underwent and completed a program, that he could still commit you know, a new offense. And I believe that that was the reason why the registration
any
law was created to begin with.
Or a sex offense. In other words, you cited 706.
606.
606. You cited factor one, which says history and characteristics. Factor two is the need for the sentence imposed. And in subsection D, it says to provide the defendant with needed education or vocational training, medical care, or other correctional treatment in the most effective manner. There's got to be a need for it.
Sure. And the need could be expressed this way. When the legislature passed the laws requiring sex offender registration, they were taking in consideration that offenders, even though they're not prosecuted, and even if a new victim didn't appear, that there's still a possibility that sex offenses were going on. So,
Mr. Mount,
that's the essence of Imbania, I think, that was cited.
But, Mr. Mount, the conditions of probation are there's two types of conditions. One is mandatory, and one is discretionary.
Yes.
And the legislature did not make this a mandatory condition when someone is convicted of a failure to report.
Yes, Your Honor. I understand that, but I think we also have to consider how did Mr. Young do when he was subject to sex offender treatment? He received treatment from two separate doctors. I believe there was Dr. Giovannoni, of course, and then there was also Dr. Tyler.
So now you're conceding that he did receive sex offender treatment.
He did receive it, and I believe it's in the PSI that he did receive. He didn't complete it.
But he said he
completed it.
In the facility.
Not in those programs. Yeah. I believe the doctor said with those particular programs that he was terminated both of those times. That is what's part of the record in the PSI.
But that's when he got his probation revoked, was sentenced to prison.
To prison.
And said he completed it in prison, which is, as you know, is a mandatory requirement to get parole for sex offenders.
Yes. If all of those things are true, and I'm not necessarily disputing it, I just can't confirm it.
I understand.
And we look at the record. The time period where, in theory, where the treatment would have occurred would have been around 2006 to 2007. And I say that because I believe he was denied parole in 2006, and he was granted parole in 2007 for the first time, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, no, it's something like that.
You know, you could infer.
What were the facts of the sex assault? Because sometimes the particular facts of the sex assault warrant a more rigorous application of sex offender treatment.
Well, the sex assault in question in 1999 involved his ex-girlfriend. He threw a bottle at her. It was in her apartment.
I understand.
He tied her up. He lifted her skirt and bra.
It wasn't children or underage.
It was a girlfriend. Okay. Yeah. He placed his mouth on her breast. He inserted his penis into her vagina.
After she said no.
It was forcible on the bed, tied down. That was my understanding of the facts.
Mr. Mount, I'd like to ask you one thing about the ICA opinion in this case. Because the same argument was made below that Young was not convicted of a new sex offense. So the ICA said the circuit court had information before it indicating his history. And then it says, furthermore, it appears that Young never completed the sex offender's treatment stemming from his previous sexual assault convictions. And I'm not sure where it gets that from. And then it says, therefore, we conclude the circuit court did not abuse its discretion in ordering Young to undergo sex offender treatment. And then, for these reasons, the judgment is affirmed. So the ICA opinion is almost very heavily relies on the fact that he never completed sex offender treatment.
There's no evidence of it, yes.
There is evidence. I mean, other than his statement.
Other than his statement,
which
are you saying that information was available to you if you wanted to get it?
Information about
whether he had completed it, as he stated in his.
I'm not saying that. I don't know if we could have obtained it. I don't know if the information still exists. I'm not sure because it was in 2006, and I believe the sentencing was 10 years later in 2016. I don't believe It was readily available to us at the time.
But you don't even know if an inquiry was made. Because as a prosecutor, if you know of the information, you have to provide
it,
right?
That's correct. There was no knowledge that I'm
right,
aware.
But you're saying that when a representation is made on something that seems to be somewhat important, you're not going to see if you can get the information.
All I'm saying is that at this point in time, and when it was before the trial court, that was not done. No.
Again, looking at the pre-sentence report, if I understood correctly, you're saying he was out on probation and he had failed to complete or had been terminated from sex offender treatment in the community because he hadn't complied with the terms of those programs? Is that what your argument was?
That's part of it. I think that's part of it. There are other things that he...
That's why his original probation was revoked.
Yes.
And he was taken into custody.
Yes.
But as Justice Pollack has indicated, in order to be paroled, he needed to have completed it, right?
That's, I think, what we can infer from the information.
In 2007?
Around 2006, around 2007, after he was denied in 2006 parole, he was granted subsequently parole, yes.
Okay, and then the pre-sentence report says that on page 29, he stated that he was not as... He mentioned his conviction for sexual assault in criminal number 99-1786, but he stated that he was not guilty of the offense, and he maintains his innocence despite the conviction and having completed sex offender treatment. So he's presenting as someone who denies culpability for the offense, mm-hmm. had gone out in the community and failed to complete sex offender treatment when he was in the community.
Right.
Then even accepting that he had completed it in prison, what's presented to the trial judge is that he's still maintaining his innocence on the underlying sexual offense and has failed to report.
That's correct.
And those are the factors that were present for the trial.
Those are certainly factors that were, I believe, considered. One moment, please. And related to that is there were, in addition to that, part of Dr. Giovannoni's report of how he did while he was under these sex offender treatment programs. He didn't take responsibility for a number of things, being late for his treatment, missing individual sessions, taking responsibility for the sexual offense, as you stated. He was suspicious of people in authority. He didn't see himself as having a problem. He didn't see a need for participating in treatment.
Where are you reading from now?
Sorry, that's PSI page 33.
When is that doctor's report?
That's Dr. Giovannoni. He treated him in August 8th, 2002.
All right. So we're talking about 15 years
ago. Yeah.
And he was already revoked for that.
That was one of the basis for his revocation, yes. He had self-destructive behaviors. He wasn't motivated for treatment, in Dr. Giovannoni's opinion. He went through the motions to avoid his probation getting revoked. He tried, to kind of... sort of participate, but he didn't fully participate. And Dr. Giovannoni concluded that his prognosis...
I'm sorry, but we are talking about 2002,
yes,
right?
2002.
And he was revoked, but he still denied the offense at the time of the PSI, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I believe so, yes. Yeah. Despite the fact that he pled to the charge, yes. Yeah. The original sex offense charge, yes. But getting back to the arguments of, how that fits into 706-606 and 706-624, I believe also, when you take account of all of these facts, his history and his character, his record, and the facts now that once he was released from custody, and what happens is that he doesn't follow the law, he doesn't continue his sex offender registration, that's a red flag. That's a red flag as to say, why would someone do that? Why would they be avoiding, coming in and telling people where they live, where they reside, updating information about his whereabouts? Why would a person do that? And when you have a person...
Actually, when he reported in January of 2014, he reported that address, 3120 Wiley Avenue?
Yes.
Which... is basically a post office box,
yes.
Provided by
right. It's not
Waikiki Health Center.
It's not a home.
Right?
Yes.
So it's not a home.
Yes.
He was basically homeless, right?
Yeah, he was a homeless person, but he's required to update on his general whereabouts, right? And he failed to do so, and that is the reason why he was prosecuted on it. All of that goes back to the reasons of why the law exists and the ongoing prosecution of registration violations. It goes to the danger that potentially persons such as Mr. Young present to the community. That's the interest, I believe, that Judge Kawamura is trying to address when she considers what are the appropriate sentence, for him. And that includes his special conditions under probation, as well as the general conditions, of course, and, any kind of incarceration. I think in consideration in totality, of all of those things and his poor history based on the information she had as far as how he did under treatment and how he did under probation and how he did under parole and how he, how he committed further offenses on release.
So she knows how he did on treatment when he didn't complete it and got his probation revoked and went to prison, and then, but she doesn't know how he did in his treatment or if he finished his treatment when he was sentenced to the facility. So in other words, under your analysis, not only didn't she have all the information, but she used information that may have been not only outdated, but he may have done right. Well in sex offender treatment.
That is true, but I think we have to take into consideration this. When the trial court judge is assessing these things, she knows a couple of things, and one of them is, as part of being referred or ordering participation in the Hawaii State sex offender treatment program, she knows that the person, the petitioner, wouldn't immediately go to treatment. There's some form of assessment or evaluation that's initially done to determine what the appropriate treatment would be, if any.
Okay, so what you're saying is he could have had an assessment and therefore the assessment may have shown that he didn't need it and then he wouldn't have had to have the treatment?
That's correct.
Okay, well, Mr. Mao, we have a case, I believe, that just said that if there isn't a reasonable basis to do it in the first place, you can't order assessment and then make a determination based on assessment. And did she order an assessment, or did she just order treatment?
No, she ordered his participation in the program, and I believe assessment is part of the program. It's the initial part of it, yes.
And so to your, I don't know if it's in the record, but what you're saying is that automatically people are assessed, and if they determine that he doesn't need it, then he doesn't have to complete the program?
Yes, logically, it goes on this, is that to find what is the appropriate treatment, there has to be an assessment and evaluation. The term that I believe Hawaii State Sex Offender Treatment Program uses is a sex offender-specific evaluation, and that is done at the beginning.
And you're certain, then, that sometimes the assessment will be no treatment is required instead of the type of treatment that may be appropriate?
Yes, and I can say this, Your Honor, and I know this is outside of the record, though, but I have to state this. While he was under probation, well...
Yeah, if it's about this case or something that...
I don't think, please don't.
If it's not in the record and it's about this case, I don't think you should...
Yeah, but I understand. It goes to your question about what happens.
Well, then don't answer my question.
Okay.
But talking about what is in the record, you represented that the sexual offense of the girlfriend involved him tying her down,
yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't recall that having read the PSI, and I just don't see that.
One more minute. Maybe I can find a reference to it.
She indicated he pushed her on the bed mm-hmm. and sexually assaulted her, even though she had said no.
I believe that the details of it are contained within pages 10 through 11. I cannot find a specific part, but that is where I received it. I didn't look at the original 1999 case. I was reviewing
it. I'm looking at pages 10 to 11.
Yeah. But that was my understanding of
okay.
the facts.
Okay, so that's what you were relying on, and that's what we would look to understand
within
what happened.
Within the PSI, yes.
Very well. Anything further, Mr. Mao, at this time?
Not at this time, Your Honor. I'd ask that the decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Luis, your rebuttal.
Well, in response to what the state said, the state regularly attends the parole hearings, because I go to a lot of parole hearings, and the records are obtainable because they can ask the parole authority to give the records. But the important thing is, when public safety, they do an assessment of the individuals that come into custody, and they order programs. And because my client was incarcerated for a sex offender crime, he could not have been paroled, as the court has pointed out, in 2006 or 7 without completing that program, because he would have, Dr. Giovanni is the contracted doctor who does that program in the facility, and he wouldn't say that he completed the program, and then the facility wouldn't release him on parole unless he had completed the program. So I want to point that out.
Okay, Mr. Luis, what's your response to the observation that in the pre-sentence report, the defendant mentioned his conviction for sexual assault in 99-1786, stated that he was not guilty of the offense, he maintains his innocence despite the conviction and having completed sex offender treatment. So at the time the judge is sentencing him, he is denying responsibility for the underlying sexual offense. Is that something that could reasonably be taken into account by the judge in ordering sex offender treatment?
Not when he's, according to him, already completed sex offender treatment, because...
Well, I guess what the CJC is, how effective could it have been?
Well, there was always an issue between the two of them. There was a previous relationship. They lived together for 6 years.
But Mr. Mao said he pled.
Yes, he did. He did plead, but I mean, for him, he spared the complaining witness the hardship of any further proceedings, and he accepted responsibility that way. I mean, him pleading to the offense, although he denies whether or not there was the consent or not the consent, he did plead to the offense.
I mean, couldn't that give the judge a reasonable basis to question whether he has benefited from whatever treatment he did get and whether additional treatment might be in order?
Well, I think the most compelling evidence that he did benefit is he hasn't been charged with a new sex crime from 99 until 2019. So we're talking a 20-year lapse of time, and he's never been charged with a new sex crime. So I believe that he has shown that he has learned from his treatment and from his incarceration and his rehabilitation.
Well, that's an argument. I mean, it's a good argument, but the question is whether the court erred and abused her discretion when she ordered it, there is evidence in the record that can justify it.
It was vague and ambiguous when the court ordered it, because there was this factual dispute. The defendant was saying he completed the sex offender treatment, and he was paroled in 2006 or 7. He could not have been paroled if he hadn't completed sex offender, because that would be a condition.
But as he's talking to the probation officer, I'm sorry, the pre-sentence report officer, despite having completed it, he said he maintains his innocence. So does that not perhaps raise some doubt about whether he has truly benefited from the treatment and whether he poses some risk of recidivism that could reasonably be addressed by additional treatment?
Well, the pretrial officer doing the pretrial report didn't even confirm with the Hawaii Paroling Authority as part of a report what programs he completed, what his statements were when he underwent the treatment, because Dr. Giovanni would have failed him. If he said, I did not do it in his treatment, then he would have been failed, because that's one of the things I've talked with Dr. Giovanni before with different cases. And it's in all kinds of different records and cases that if someone denies that they commit an offense in sex offender treatment, then they're discharged from the program.
So at what point was he being untruthful then? Either he was untruthful to Dr. Giovanni so he could graduate from sex offender treatment, or he was untruthful to the probation officer in the PSI.
Well, it was in the context of whether or not he was going to have to undergo sex offender treatment and start over from scratch again that this pre-sentence report was being taken.
And the court didn't seem to be concerned about that statement. What the court asked him about was she actually kept asking him, even though he'd gone to trial, on the drug offense, which he then acknowledged. So it seems like we're engaging in significant speculation to say that the court relied on this and this and this, all these other things, when according to the ICA, he hadn't completed the treatment, and therefore that's what justified her sentence. And we're coming up with a whole different theory.
We're coming up with a theory that you didn't raise either, right?
I believe it is. I even wrote a note here during the state's presentation of their evidence. Pure speculation that he needed the sex offender treatment because that's what is exactly required under the 706-606. The need for the sentence, as Justice Pollack pointed out, and
he
we're here
out to you about the need
on a sentence
right.
issue.
Very well. Anything further at this time for the court?
No, Your Honor.
Very well. Thank you then to both of our attorneys for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Eku iluna. Please rise. Ua ho'oku ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolo kolo kie hano hano okomoku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now adjourned.